No, I wasn't doing any orange oil today. That's something we should bring up during the podcast, though.
We mentioned that once already, actually.
Okay. Well, let's mention it again.
Yeah, it works really well.
I mean, the things like that, you just, it comes up in conversation, you mention it.
Pretty soon, we're going to get a bonus from whatever weird company makes that stuff.
They'll send you a box of orange oil.
I know.
That would be cool.
Okay, let's go ahead and count it down. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up. Welcome to Stam Show here today. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, our guest Brian, and Jeff, and I'm your host Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stam Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stam Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. Our topics for this episode will include This Week in History, October 16th, 1861, the Confederacy starts selling postage stamps. Updates. Hashtag stamp stories and hashtag WWTT. Our advanced topic today will be the all-controversial reperforating. This week in history, on October 16, 1861, the Confederacy started selling postage stamps as the Confederate States of America. It was able to issue only a modest number of postage stamps, 9 basic types in all. The first Confederate postage stamps were issued and placed in circulation on October 16, 1861, 5 months after postal service between the North and the South had been suspended. The first postage stamps issued was a 5-cent green depicting Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederate States. It was printed by the lithograph process by Hoyer and Ludwig of Richmond, Virginia. Like almost all Confederate issues, these stamps were imperforate, and single stamps had to be cut from the sheet with razor or scissors. This stamp was reprinted in blue in 1862. Do you guys have anything to add?
I like Confederate stamps.
They're really cool. Yep. They're really old, and the gum sucks.
Oh, yeah. Finding mint never hinged? Almost impossible.
And they're always wrinkly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it only shrunk, and
the gum does cause a lot of wrinkles, and you have to be careful because over the years it creased the stamps.
Right.
Also, a lot of them were brought back as souvenirs, and the soldiers who were bringing back the whatever they picked up, they didn't always store them so well.
You know, your back pocket, yeah, when you're marching, and then you get shot at, and you bleed all over it.
Well, there was a person who was talking about they put the stamps in the soles of their shoes to like strengthen their shoes, I guess. And then they got home and they go, hey, look, I've got stamps in my shoes. Let's see if they're worth something.
Updates. Linz reports that Mystic, the mail order firm based in Camden, New York, sold their inverted Jenny plate block. Owner Donald J. Sundman had acquired the block in a trade for a 1 cent Z-grill he had purchased in 1998 for $935,000. Oh, no.
That was cash.
The Z-grill was traded to Bill Gross, who had bought the inverted Jenny plate block for $2.97 million.
Oh, my God.
Out of the blue, Donald got an unsolicited phone call from a serious group of European buyers that offered him, quote, upwards of $4.8 million.
This is going to be a thing now, isn't it?
Yes.
The buyers were described by their representative as people who like to collect valuable things, not just stamps, but also things like historical documents. They are neither philatelists nor investors. Mystic employees were said to have received a bonus.
Oh my gosh. This sound effects thing has been sitting on his desk for I don't know how many years.
Hey, at least he's not saying gicle.
Oh crap.
I was actually going to bring it up during the Confederate part.
As a result of the purchase, Sundman stated, I am sad to see it go too. The McCoy stamps still have not been found. Maybe the recent purchase will cause Mr. Sunman to increase the reward.
I don't know.
There's no sound effect for increased reward. Sorry. You can find more about this on lins.com under the breaking news section. Okay, stamp stories. Hashtag WWTT. Thank you, Canada, for today's hashtag. What do you think of when you think of hockey? And Scott, you're going to go last. Jeff.
When I think of hockey, I think of going to a hockey game and watching a boxing match break out.
There we go.
People losing teeth and not being able to see where the puck is all the time.
All right, Cash?
I actually agree with that. I've only been to one hockey game. It was over at the Ducks. And, you know, I had heard everything. There was actually blood on the ice. They had to actually stop the game and go out there and wipe some blood up.
Well, that must have been a good game then.
Whoa.
Brian?
I'm just the oddball here. I think of all the great stamps that Canada has issued featuring hockey.
Please tell me there's a whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah, hold on. Is there one here?
There we go. That works.
Okay, Scott. What did Canada put on their newest hockey-themed postage stamp?
They put the Zamboni. 7 different varieties, each one with a Canadian team's colors and logo on it. So you can collect all 7 stamps in a coil with all the Zambonis on it. I thought that was kind of cool because you don't normally see Zambonis on stamps.
I had to look up what a Zamboni was.
Yeah, I was going to say, for people that don't know, you know, Americans, what a Zamboni is.
Well, I now have a new collecting topic of Zambonis on stamps.
Yeah, so there's 7 of them now, huh?
I think I'll be able to get them all.
But the Zamboni machines are what they use to grind the ice down to make it level when they're playing. So, big, weird, kind of street sweeper-looking contraptions.
Wasn't Snoopy always on a Zamboni?
Was he?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he Canadian?
I think so.
He liked to ice skate.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he did. That's true.
So I should put Snoopy on the back of the Zamboni.
No, they also have 6 hockey players from each of the 6 original teams that were Canadian when the NHL was established. So there's actually 2 different issues: the hockey players from the 6 original teams, and then the Zambonis from the current 7 teams.
So I'm still kind of curious, though. Canada issues stamps?
Well, they do have mail.
Oh, but I thought they just like used whatever country they were in.
Well, see, the American postal system, we have topics such as muscle cars on stamps.
No, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. No, but muscle cars. Okay. The Canadian muscle car is the Zamboni.
See, now that makes sense.
Yeah. The circle of life.
For sure.
So, yes, listeners, you can run to your nearest Post Est Canada and purchase your own team logo painted Zamboni. You could even stick your most hated team to the bottom of your shoes and stomp them all day long. Tell us what stamp release made you scratch your head and wonder what were they thinking with the hashtag stamp stories WWTT.
I have one question, though. They have 7 Zambonis. Are they like different models, or are they the same Zamboni and the only thing that changes is the team?
It's the same Zamboni and just the team colors and logo are different.
Oh. Photoshop.
Ah.
What's a post-est?
That's their name of Canada's post office service.
Well, that's what they call a post office, eh?
Yes. Okay.
Do I have one of those?
Thank you. You walked right into it.
Now get on your mounted horse and walk on out of here because they don't go very fast.
Yeah, it's too cold up there for them to go very fast.
Okay, so for more advanced collectors, today we're going to talk about reperforating. A very controversial topic. I myself am a novice collector, so I decided to do the research on the topic all by myself. And then presented it to the experts. And much to my amazement, there is a lot of misinformation out there. So let's start with what the definition of a perforation is.
Yeah, I think in more your discussion was directed toward perforating, not re-perforating, and the different types of perforating that are out there.
Well, re-perforating too. I literally picked up the phone today, and there was somebody scared to death of picking up stamps. He wanted to start collecting, and he wanted to start from the fourth bureau issue forward, not including that issue, so anything after it. And he was scared to death of getting re-perforated stamps. Do they exist? Well, yeah, but they're going to be kind of rare. But then he wanted to get into a big, long discussion over what constitutes a re-perforation, why would somebody re-perforate a stamp to begin with, et cetera, et cetera. So it definitely goes right along. It'd be good to answer some of those questions, I think.
Yeah, that was fairly long phone call you had with the person, right?
Yeah, that was it was 8 or 9 minutes. He asked. He was so concerned about it, he asked me 5 or 6 times in different formats the same question. How do I avoid re-perforated stamps? How do I make sure I'm not going to be ended up with them? How do I tell what they look like, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think the first thing, at least for this guy, is he's chosen an era where alteration of perforations or adding perforations after the fact is a fairly rare occurrence.
Well, with the exception of straight edges.
Well, but it's still a rare occurrence because the stamps in general are so inexpensive that if you have a straight edge stamp, you just go out and get a fully perforated one. You don't, there's no, the, not a whole lot of increased value by adding the perforation. So it doesn't make really that much sense to pay somebody to add those perforations.
Well, I would think.
I mean, even if it costs you as little as $10 to add perforations to a straight edge on a stamp, a lot of those stamps don't have a value of $10. So it doesn't make any sense to pay somebody $10 when you could just go and buy another stamp and it would cost you maybe $1 or $2 or $5.
And now you actually have the real one.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost $10 to have a stamp perforated.
Well, it depends.
It costs about $1. And the people who do it, that you have an unsaleable 20 or 30. I'm thinking of like a 619 or 616.
We try to use words here instead of numbers.
You have the 5 cent Huguenot Walloon or the right. 5 cent Lexington Concord, and you have an unsaleable stamp or a stamp that you might be able to turn into a $15 or $20 stamp if you pay $1 to get it perforated. Of course, they're going to do it.
Yeah, and that depends on who you're talking about having do it. And if they're good at it or good enough to make it look...
Oh, dollar perforating right. Never looks good. It's always off gauge. It's terrible. They're just slamming them through. But, you know, a person who looks at it and just goes, hey, yeah, that looks good. You know, he's not going to check it on a perf gauge, which if you check it on a perf gauge, 99% of these dollar perforatings, re-perforating, which they do exist, you know, they're easy to catch.
No, even most people are using the, there is a famous manufacturer of perforating adding machines out there.
And perforating adding machines?
I don't know.
What are they, sewing machines?
Re-perforating machines, for lack of a better word. And many of them are on gauge, but the filing is so obvious you can spot it from across the room.
Right.
It's not even...
The guy who made the specialist gauge for the United States also made re-perforating machines.
I wasn't going to say it, but you went ahead and said it. Okay.
But
let's do a little disclaimer here. We are not teaching people how to re-perforate stamps. No. We're teaching you how to catch re-perforated stamps. Do not send us emails saying, gosh, now everybody knows how to re-perforate stamps. We're not doing that.
No, but the nice thing about that is that those are the ones that are generally very obvious.
Yeah.
That it's hard to hide those. And because the characteristics, at least for experts, are well known and they're not difficult to teach. Once you show somebody, they go, oh, okay, now I can spot that on my own and I don't have to get an expert opinion. You just have to be shown. So they aren't that convincing, but they did come from the same guy.
But, you know, when you're dealing with 20th century stamps, The paper is just so pulpy that to spot a filed stamp all you have to do is look at the perf tips. When you're dealing with plastic stamps, they have a much harder paper, and they can be filed, and it's not quite so obvious that it was reperforated.
Right. So the basic tools, a magnifying glass and a perf gauge, are really what you need to be able to spot a reperforation.
Brian, why don't you go back and tell people what filing is, because...
You take an emery board. You can put the stamp near a hard surface like the edge of a desk. You rub the emery board along the side of the perfs to rough them up a little bit, and it gives it the appearance that the stamp has been torn from a sheet.
Yeah, it gives it a roughness instead of a nice clean cut.
I've also noticed that 20th century stamps, they all tend to be very close to the same size. If you have another reference of the same issue and you just compare one to another, even if it's the 1 cent Lexington Concord instead of the 5 cent, you can spot stamps that have perforations added just based upon size many times.
Yeah, a lot of times they do look small.
Yes.
But the paper makes a big difference. But what I was going to say is your magnifying glass, your loop, makes a big difference, and it's worth the investment in an 8 or a 10 power loop to be able to see the perforations, mm-hmm. and a good light, of course, to be able to see them as well. And that really is what you need to be able to spot a reperforation. And then it's just a matter of looking at what regular, normal, original perforations look like. And then when you see one that doesn't look like that, and they generally are pretty obvious that they don't look like that, then you go, oh, now I know what that looks like, and they're easy to spot.
So what are the reasons to reperforate a stamp?
Where's that cha-ching?
There.
That's why.
That's why, yes.
I mean, Brian touched on it a second ago. So, yeah, I mean, if you could explain, because this was, again, this guy that called... a couple of his big concerns is, A, why does it matter? That was actually one of the first things he asked me is, you know, is this going to affect the value of the stamp? Do I need to look out for it to begin with? And then his next thing was, if so, why? Why do I need to look out for it? How does it affect the value of the stamp? And why are people doing it? So if we can answer those, that would be helpful.
Well, the better centered a stamp appears, the more a dealer will charge for it. And so one of the goals of reperforating or adding perforations would be to make the stamp better centered. But in many cases, that will also make the stamp appear small. And as Brian said before, compare it to a normal stamp or another stamp, and if it is much smaller, then that's a stamp that you probably wouldn't want to be purchasing because there is a much better likelihood that it is reperforated.
Okay, so that's one reason. I know there's another reason why people would reperf.
I have 6 reasons.
Oh, my gosh.
Hold on. Is one of them the inverted Jenny we talked about last time?
Yes, to eliminate an edge stamp, to eliminate...
Well, no, that one is to hide the fact that the stamp, so you have 7. Unless it's on your list.
No, I didn't write that one down. You got me there.
Uh-oh.
So go ahead and tell them what that whole thing is.
Well... some of the inverted Jennies that were stolen had natural straight edges, and the perforations were added to disguise the fact that they were straight edges, and therefore more easily recognized as stolen property.
One of the reasons I can think of that's hopefully on the list, just thinking Washington Franklins in general, you can have a stamp that's perforate, that there might be a cheap variety worth 25 cents, but if you take it and change the gauge of one of the sides, if you find one that maybe had a really big side on one or two sides you can reperforate, you can get a much rarer variety that is worth a lot more money than the 20 cent or 25 cent stamp you started with.
Yep, I got down the stamp's basic catalog number. You can change that by changing the gauges on the side, the perf gauges.
What else? Let's see. She found 6. We've stated 3 so far, including Cash's number 7. What else is there?
To fix a blind perf.
Oh, that's a good
point. That's not really reperforation.
That's not reperforation. That's fixing a blind perf.
Yeah.
What if they're terrible at it?
Yeah. Well, if they're terrible at it, then it's not good and it doesn't help. But most people can kind of hit pretty close to center on those and make it look good.
So what other ones?
I got to eliminate faults like pulled or short perforations, stained perforations, tiny margin tears, thinning in the margin or along the perforations, creases, or even the removal of a cancel that might have just missed the stamp.
Oh.
Yeah. Stamps with these faults, does it kind of hurts the value, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, any faults like that will affect the value, but the one that's most concerning to me is if it's just barely touched by a cancel and you reperforate it and you move the perf line in a little bit and you get rid of that cancel, now you have what appears to be an unused stamp.
Then which, you can put fake gum on it and...
and call it an unused stamp when it has actually been used.
Yeah.
Well, that will increase the value significantly, especially for older stamps.
Yeah, I was going to say older stamps. I could see that being, quote, handy when you have stamps that have value for mint no gum.
Yeah.
So I could see people trying to get away with that, definitely.
Those are typically 19th century stamps.
I even found, I guess the number 8 I just thought of is that sometimes freaks or errors, people like to collect double or triple perforations across a stamp.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, yeah. They like...
create their own freak or oddity.
Exactly. They just go to town on it. 50 perfs on the middle side between, you know, whatever they come up with.
Try to make it look like a sheet fold over or something.
Yeah, just go to town on it. I was just like, wow, you just destroyed that stamp.
Schizophrenic perf in, maybe?
Yeah.
What's next on the list, or was that all 6?
Oh, no, the different kind of printings that create the perforations. Flat plate printings. They have straight edges. They'll also try to remove the guidelines, which we talked about. U.S. collectors prefer stamps with perforations all the way around.
What's interesting, though, is European collectors not necessarily, because that shows a position on the plate, and they a lot of times will like that better.
Actually, in America, there was a big movement back in the 30s to collect straight-edge stamps, but it fizzled. People started getting a little more conventional, and there was even a society... at one point, straight edge. I don't know the name, but let's call it the Straight Edge Collectors.
Well, I bought a collection that came from Europe, and it had, I think it was Swedish stamps in it. And they collected not only the fully perforated stamps, but the stamps that only have perforations on 3 sides, because those stamps come from a booklet pane.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to be able to show, okay, I got the sheet stamp and the booklet pane stamp.
Plus each position.
Right, and then they'd want one with a straight edge on the left and one with a straight edge on the right.
And then double straight edges.
And a double straight, right. So yep. That's the way they collect. They actually like to collect those, and they think that it adds to the collection, which is fine. It doesn't matter. It's just not mainstream in the United States to collect that way.
Well, I remember reading a Pat's paragraph about exactly that, and he said it fell out of vogue because creating a straight edge was so easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you had people who were chopping off stamps or perforations in order to create straight edges. Now, personally,
you would dwarf this.
Bring it up with him. Bring it up with him. Not me. He wrote it, not me. It was written, what, a long time ago. But me personally, I collect double straight edges, but they have to show the guidelines. And I will get a double straight edge with guidelines, and I always pull those out, and I always keep them.
So that would be like a corner stamp, then?
It would be a corner stamp, but again, it can't just have 2 straight edges. It has to show the guidelines.
Mm-hmm. You first said that, and I'm going, coil? No, corner stamps with guidelines. Okay.
You know, I've heard you mention twice that the guidelines along the straight edges, and that's actually one really good way to detect if the stamp has been perforated, is knowing where the guidelines are on certain sheets. And if you can see a guideline, oftentimes that could be an indication.
Yeah. Well, the education comes is you have to look up the information on how the stamps were printed and what formats, because mm-hmm. there are some stamps that were perforated along the guidelines, like the Zeppelins, and then there are other stamps that were not, which a lot of the 20th century flat plate printings weren't, Washington Franklin's in particular.
To be even more confusing, you have the Trans-Mississippi's that the horizontal guidelines were perforated through. The vertical guidelines, though, if you see a vertical guideline, then it's clearly reperforated.
Yeah, you just have to do the research to find out what the format was that they were printed in, and then how they were cut down to be issued in what size pane. Mm-hmm. And really, the size of the pane was dictated by how big the standard post office drawer was and how they had to cut it down to make it fit in there and lay flat.
Yeah.
I see that. Yeah, I see stuff like that. Early airmails do that a lot. I'll see stamps that come through where somebody's not exactly reperforating, but they are altering the perf tips. There'll be a guideline because it was perforated along the top or a side. But they will very carefully, again, using an emery board on a flat surface, get rid of just a little bit of the ink so that to the naked eye, even if you hold it up close to your eye, you don't really see the guideline anymore. They've gotten rid of 95% of it. But if you look at it under a loop with bright light, you can see, you know, on a C3 that's got a red edge out, there's little bits of flakes of red left on the perf tips.
And the reason they do that is because if you have a really deep guideline, it looks like the perforations are gone. I mean, it darkens the perforations and it makes the stamp look very unbalanced.
Yeah, when you put it against a dark background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the next topic. Genuine coils. Go.
Oh, no. Round one. What's the statistic, would you guys say, the percentage of fake coils versus real that you see?
Flat plate, 80%.
Wow.
I was going to say 70.
Yeah.
That's still scary.
It depends on the issue.
Yeah.
But if you're talking flat plate, you have perf 12 coils, and you have perf 8.5 coils, and you have perf 10 coils. And the perf 12 coils are probably the most faked, and then the 8.5, and then the 10. And I would say of the perf 12 coils, 70-80% is probably about right. But when you get down to the perf 10 coils, then you're maybe talking 50-60%.
Just out of curiosity, how many of the perf 12 coils, there's two ways you can alter the stamp to make it appear to be a perf 12 coil. I find that typically it's a straight edge, fully perforated stamp that has been trimmed on one side. I don't think very many of these have perforations added. What do you think?
We've seen plenty with perforations added.
Yeah, there are a lot of ones that do have perforations added, but it's easiest to trim off perforations from a sheet stamp. It's easier to do that than it is to add perforations to an imperforate sheet stamp. Mm-hmm. And it's also a little bit more difficult to detect because the first thing people look at is the perforations. And if they see good perforations, they just go, oh, must be good. And they don't think that, well, but they could have just trimmed the perforations off of one side and it has a natural straight edge on the other side. So you still have to look at the size of the coil, and that's one of the things that really makes a big difference. A size, it can only be so big, mm-hmm. when you trim it. And, you know, a lot of people have shaky hands, so so when they use scissors, it's not really difficult at times to detect that.
Well, you guys taught me the most excellent way to detect a fake coil easily. Now it requires being able to have a really good zoomed in close up scan or picture of the stamp. But you take a stamp that's supposed to be a coil, you cut it in half down the middle, and you mirror transpose them so that the coil sides from each side of the stamp are now not on the outsides but on the inside touching each other. And it takes a second to kind of get your eyes focused to see where the little pits and valleys and mountains are, but it should be like a puzzle piece that fits together. If there's a dip on one side, there should be a little bit of a hill that's an exact match on the other in the same spot.
I just want to say, don't cut your stamps in half. Cut the scan in half.
The scan, yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, I know what I meant.
That actually comes out of knowing how the coils were made and mm-hmm. how they were cut into strips. And they were cut using razor blades, but they were fixed. And then the sheet was drawn across those fixed knives. And so if you pulled the sheet halfway and stopped and then pulled it the rest of the way across, that point where you stopped is going to leave what's called a little hesitation mark. And that's where those little peaks and valleys come from. And so since you have multiple knives, they should all occur at the same spot. And therefore, when you Photoshop it and you transpose and compare the straight edges, that's why they should have those marks that correspond.
The 1901 issue, also what, number 316? 316?
Yeah, that's one of them.
Yeah. That was when I was looking at the other day.
Those are experimental, and those were done differently. But we're talking about the Perf 12 Washington Franklins. Okay.
Now I'm going to ask, I kind of know the answer myself, but I do want to ask for more basic knowledge. Why are coils faked so much?
Because it's easy.
Because it's easy and they're more expensive?
A lot more expensive.
In some cases.
Yeah.
So there you go. For those of you that didn't know, and I'm not going to pick up collecting coils anytime soon.
Well,
there's no reason to be afraid of them. It's just
that's true.
You should just kind of ensure your purchase by making sure you have a certificate of authenticity when you purchase it.
Yeah. If you're not sure, send it to somebody that knows. Definitely.
Okay. So what kind of tools are used besides an emery board? What should we be looking for?
Perforating or for...
What do they use to re-perforate besides the emery board?
Well, the emery board is just for filing.
Yeah. Brian was bringing up, filing at the end. And the whole thing with whether it's re-gumming, re-perforating, repairs, whatever it is, it's not the actual action that you're paying for. It's the cleanup afterwards that you're paying for. So a $1 re-perforating job will not have the work put into it to make it look real. Same thing with regumming. Regumming, the cleanup afterwards is very important. The people, if they do a cheap regumming job, they don't get that. And even if you have a really good one, the experts are still going to be able to most of the time pick out a reperf, and most of the time going to be able to pick out a regum. No matter, unless the person just invests huge amounts of time in trying to fix this stamp. So luckily, collectors really don't have to be really super worried about it, but you do have to get a cert if you're spending significant money. That's for me personally, if I spend more than $300, I get a cert.
Well, I think Jessica's asking what are the other
how do you even reperf something? I think is kind of the question.
The reperforating what do you use to reperf process? Stuff?
Yeah,
and it is. Oh. I've actually seen a few machines in my day. It is basically a, for lack of a better word, a comb of pins that is pushed into the some male pins that are pushed into a female.
Well, think of a three-hole punch.
Yes, exactly.
It's just kind of like that, except the pins are smaller and there's more of them.
Yes, and it's just a line of perfs. And so there's some characteristic differences between the way stamps are re-perforated and the way stamps are originally perforated. Originally, they go around in a wheel. So knowing that the two processes are different, you can start to look for little clues that the stamp has been perforated by looking at that stuff.
Yeah, what's the term for what it is that you're supposed to see? Because the wheels that are doing the perforating pull the sheet through.
Yes.
So it leaves, it's layman's terms, it leaves the little tiny hills on one side of the perforation.
Well, it depends on what the tension on the
tension.
Paper.
Okay.
It depends on what the tension is, and how fast the paper is moving when it goes through the perforation wheels.
Well, the thing to remember is when the paper is going through a pin wheel, the pin will dig in on one edge and exit the other edge. That all the time, 100%, well, I shouldn't say 100% of the time, but so much of the time that it's easy to detect, makes a hole which is not perfectly round. Very, very, very seldom on U.S. stamps. Foreign stamps are different because they have some comb perforating devices, but very rarely on U.S. stamps will you see perfectly round holes.
It'll be razor sharp on one side where it entered into the paper, and maybe just a little rougher on the back where it came out, the way it's punching it out.
Yeah.
Well, no. After the, I think after the 1950s, the holes did become very uniform.
Well, who's re-perforating 1950 stamps?
I know of two stamps that I've seen that have had perforations altered that were done in 1990-something.
What was it? Tell us a story.
A story? Well, one day I had the pleasure of looking at a few stamps, actually here at BSE, RW59. Somebody tried. Notoriously poorly centered because they're really big on the top and the bottom, really small on the left and the right. And they actually tried to shrink down and shrink the perfs on the top and the bottom to make it appear perfectly centered. And it was just so obvious. You could spot it a mile away.
Someone was bored.
Well, somebody wanted to try to prove a point.
That's what they were trying to increase they were trying to get better centered stamp to increase the value of the stamp, which is one of the reasons that reperforating is done, and you mentioned that.
So I also found that the opposite sides of the stamp should have the same sharpness and roughness and should line up.
It should definitely be parallel. I've seen a lot of them where, you know, you line it up and they're
just a trapezoid.
It's just terribly done. But, you know, I have to admit, I was a stamp collector when I was like 8 or 10 or something, and I remember making coils. It was like, ooh, cool, and I just took the scissors and cut it out and stuck it in my book because I couldn't afford the stamp.
And a lot of them, they do have innocent origins like that. People aren't doing it sometimes specifically to con people for the money. They're doing it for that exact reason. I hear that a lot.
Yeah, you get a lot of older collections. Well, my grandfather collected it. Well, yeah, he didn't have the money for the expensive stamp, so he just made one to fill the spot, kind of looked right, and he was happy. Oh. And he wasn't trying to defraud anybody.
My favorite story about grandpas is a person got a collection of stamps, and they wanted every hole filled, and they actually cut pictures out of auction catalogs and put them in for all the stamps they didn't have. So when the wife or whoever took it in to sell it, everybody said, oh, wow, this is a great collection, bought it, and then got on the phone and said, hey, you know, all these expensive stamps here, there are pictures.
Well, Tom, who's not here today, he's dealing with that because his dad has a collection that he's letting Tom go through and help him catalog it so that he knows what's there. And he's finding that quite a few of the spaces are filled with pictures of stamps instead of real stamps. So he knows exactly what you're talking about.
That's common. I've gone through a collection like that myself. A woman who collected stamps very avidly. Her collection was fairly decent, but some of the more expensive stuff, especially as she got older, and her daughter admitted this, she got a little senile towards the end, but she still loved stamps. Well, then became perfectly acceptable in her mind to, oh, I don't have the stamp, I'll just cut out the picture.
Yeah, she had a 1 cent magenta, I remember, in her album.
Yes.
That was cut out of some article, and I was going, oh. And it was orange, it wasn't red.
Yeah.
But then again, it was on an envelope, it was a stamp, right? It was an ink stamp. It wasn't an actual stamp.
What?
The one cent magenta?
No, that was an actual stamp.
It was an adhesive stamp, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's cut to shape. Highly faulty. But it's the only one.
With the forest of signatures on the back, too.
With a forest of signatures.
Yeah, I've yet to see a picture of the back of that stamp. I want to see what it looks like on the back. Are those floating around online?
Yeah, you can get a picture of the back. Some of the expertising marks, too, are big, huge Starburst expertising mark.
Graffiti.
Yeah, graffiti.
So-and-so was here.
Yep.
That would definitely add your street cred. Yeah.
What else you got, Jessica?
Well, rotary printings, from what I understand, they're always perforated. So anything that's unperforated, no?
No.
Well, there's no straight edges on a reprint.
Well, you have coils.
There are some.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There are some. The coil waste. The coil waste issues do have
generally
straight edges.
You're right, bottom rows. Up it.
And there is an imperforate rotary coil. It's got number 459. It's a Washington coil.
Yeah.
It's the only rotary coil that's imperforate.
But oftentimes you don't have to worry about people adding perforations to that.
It's expensive. It's expensive enough that you wouldn't want to add perforations to that.
Yeah, I was saying, those are ungodly expensive. Those are rare circumstances.
Paper fiber characteristics. The conditions that the stamps were printed in, you know, kind of cement it in time. When you go back later and try to mess with the paper, it's obvious.
Sometimes, because when you put the gum, you have a certain amount of moisture in the paper when the stamps are printed. And as the ink dries and the paper, the water in the paper evaporates, it can cause the paper to shrink in in one direction or another. It depends on what direction the paper was made in. And then you have gum that was applied, and the humidity in the air can affect the gum, and it will shrink and expand. So one thing you don't want to do is store your stamps in a place where it has high humidity or where the temperature goes up and down and up and down and up and down, because that will cause your stamps to become damaged. But yes, the stamps can change very slightly in size, and so that will change the gauge of the perforations very slightly, but not significantly.
One thing I've got to point out too is this discussion is mainly about U.S. stamps. When you get into things like the straightness of perforations, you can look at other countries like China. They were notorious for having terrible, terrible perforations.
Yes, and we do have a worldwide audience.
Definitely. So, again, a lot of this pertains to U.S. You got to be careful with foreign stuff. I know China, for one, didn't they get a lot of their early stamp supplies, their manufacturing equipment, as second-hand equipment from the British?
Or third or fourth hand.
Yeah. And they used it till it fell apart, put it back together three or four times, and just kept going ad infinitum.
Not only that, but when we're talking about the pins going in and coming out, leaving roughness and not round holes, there are a lot of countries who use comb perforators. So if you're looking at Great Britain stamps, everything we said doesn't apply, because those pins went straight down through the paper and straight up again. And basically, exactly the way that a reperforator perforates a stamp is exactly the way that they perforated their stamps. As a matter of fact, coming to mind is there's a Perfin in Australia. For their official stamps, they'd put an O and an S. Nobody in the world now authenticates those unless they're used or on cover or there's something else going with it. Because if you have a Mint Never Hinge stamp, the fakers are so good today that it's impossible, literally it is impossible, to tell a fake original or a fake official from a real official. The Australians expertising committees just threw up their hands and said, there's no way.
Well, you can tell some fakes, but you can't tell all fakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fakes that are coming out now, the fakes that you see on eBay everywhere.
They're just so good.
They're so good, yeah. Because as soon as you get the pins in the right position, you know, so they're not, you know, odd spaced, as soon as they're going in the right hole, there's no way to tell, because you're duplicating how they were printed. With the U.S. stamps, you're not duplicating how they were printed, perforated. The way they were perforated is totally different than the way fakers are reperforating the stamps. They then have to go back and doctor and monkey with their work to make it try to look like how it was originally done.
I mean, otherwise you'd have to start with an entire U.S. imperforate sheet and try to make your own machine, and that would just be... So, one thing real quick, just because when I first started, I found it interesting. For those that don't know, could you guys describe what a perfin is?
Oh,
perforated initial.
Yeah, perforated initial.
Or maybe a design.
Could be a design, yeah. Could be initials, could be...
But it was done by companies in order to make sure that their employees didn't steal their stamps.
Or it was done officially, you know, by a government wanting to...
Well, yeah.
Well, same thing. Is yeah. to prevent your employees from stealing your stamps, basically.
Yes.
With one exception, which I thought was cool, is the control marks on Shermax.
Control perfins, yes. Yeah. Those were differentiated.
Those were for control accounting... not really accounting purposes, but spinning to read where the stamp was as it was going through the machine. I thought that was interesting. Early form of computer, sort of.
So the big thing you should take away is if you have foreign stamps and you're concerned about a reperforation, you need to find an expert committee that will expertise the country that you're dealing with. We are in the United States, and we deal with a majority of the stamps we deal with are United States and China. And our Chinese experts a lot of times are from China, and they look at the stamps and for us, and they give us their opinions.
Well, China is the early stuff. Again, it's incredibly difficult to fake the
right
amateurish way that they, I mean,
it's so bad. It's hard so to bad. Replicate.
It's hard to replicate. Exactly.
But like I said, when you're looking at U.S. stamps, that's mostly what we're talking about. But so find an expert company that deals with your stamps.
So what advice do you have for collectors about this topic?
Well, educate yourself, first of all. Learn what areas of your country that you collect are subject to faking and reperforating and altering and things like that to increase the value. And then protect yourself in those areas by using the expert committee opinions and certificates to render opinions on those stamps to make sure that they are genuine.
What I took away was own a good perf gauge.
Mm-hmm. That can help.
Well, that too. That goes along with education.
Mm-hmm.
Get the proper tools. A little bit of education on your part will probably help you avoid a lot of pitfalls, and then the ones that you need help with, you can use the expert committees for.
A lot of the stuff we've been talking about, there are really awesome images in the Philatelic Book of Secrets.
Good point.
A lot of good information good on plug. That in there. Yeah, shameless plug, but man, did it fit in there just perfect.
Well, in my opinion, and I deal with so many people who have this problem, figure out a price point that you are comfortable with. If it's $100, if it's $1,000, whatever it is, figure out a price point where if it's lower than that, you're willing to do the research yourself, but above that, get a certificate. If I'm paying $300, not catalog value, if I'm actually giving $100 bills to somebody, I want a cert. At $275, I'll trust my own judgment.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. If Scott says 70% and Cash says 80% for the number of fakes in a category, that's pretty bad. I want to make sure, especially if it's one of those more expensive ones, that I'm protected in what I'm getting. There's no way I'd want to take a chance on an expensive stamp.
Yeah. But less expensive stamps, you have to remember, it's not really worth the time to alter or repair some of those stamps. It's true. Really when you're talking about the several $100 stamps mm-hmm. that you have to start worrying about this. So, you know, below a certain price point, you can trust that this stamp has not been played with most of the time.
Well, I don't know. I saw a roll of 409 2-cent Washington imperforated coil roll.
Yes.
That had totally been reperforated.
How many were there?
500. And so there were 500 fake stamps, all of which had nice, round, clear, perfect perforations. And the stamp, I believe, cataloged $55. So, you know, at $55, you know, if you're paying, let's say you're paying half catalog, you're paying $25, $27, you still have to know, because at $27, nobody is going to submit a stamp for certification for $27. It's not worth it. Nobody should do it. But you have to know, in order to do it yourself, you have to know how to spot those really doggy looking, you know, perfectly round, perfectly shiny holes and say, no, that's not the $55 variety. That's the $1.50 variety that somebody punched holes in.
I know it's hard. Nobody can see my face right now, but I have a pretty decent look of disbelief that somebody did that to an entire roll of stamps.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, they made entire rolls of 500 imperforate coil stamps
mm-hmm.
where all you do is every stamp, you just add a row of perforations right along the...
Oh, set yourself up a little assembly line.
Yeah, it seems like that would be the easiest ones to do, is if you got a whole roll, just sit there and
Actually, Kesha, I disagree with you. I don't think there's a dollar amount where you shouldn't get a cert. I mean, I would... That... A perf 12 coil, I would get a cert even if it's a $30 stamp.
Well, but that was just his level of financial pain.
Personal preference.
Yeah. But if it's a, I don't know, a...
Well, I'm not going to pay $30 for a $30 stamp. You know, I'm not going to spend $30 to certify a stamp that catalogs $30.
Yeah, break even plus a couple of bucks.
Yes. Because I mean, then you have to pay for the stamp too.
Yeah.
So well, now you're into a stamp for $60. The catalog's $30. Now you have a problem.
Well, I mean, you're looking at it from one perspective too. I can see Brian's side too. What if you're just a collector and you're doing it to build your collection and you want certified stamps?
If you're talking about a coil, then it's worth it if there's 60, 70, 80% of them out there are fake.
Yeah.
If you want, because the certified ones don't go for $30. The certified ones are going to go for $60, $80, $100 simply because it has that certificate saying it's genuine, because there are so many fakes out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, then Scott should raise their prices.
Well, from what I understand from a business standpoint, fakes always hurt the market.
Oh,
yes, yeah. Absolutely.
So,
well, I collect Italy and Roman states.
Yes, we know.
Yeah, I know. But I still like to say the story. Roman states are just impossible to sell, not worth anything, because they were highly faked. And there were three issues. And the first issue was almost never faked. And that first issue that was never faked lived with the rest of them and is valueless too.
Well, I mean, my comment is saying, I said it jokingly, if I'm never going to collect coils, I might have been joking, but there are other people that do go, screw this, I'm not going to touch it. So you're right, that does fakes definitely do affect the market in that sense.
Yeah, how many people don't even collect rotary coils, which are impossible to fake because there's nothing to fake them from, just because they've heard of all the fakes and coils. They just don't understand.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us here at Stamp Show here today. Don't forget to hit us up on Twitter and Facebook and give us all your questions and comments. And keep collecting. This episode of Stamp Show here today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today. No such number, no such zone.